powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
This is Jake and Stacy on 710 ESPN Seattle. Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Jake Heaps and Stacy Ross.
This hour of Jake and Stacy is brought to you by the Pro Club. Michael Bumpus in here for Jake Heaps, who's on vacation. Thanks again, Bump, for joining us.
Anytime, Stace.
Now, I actually scrapped one of the segments that we were going to have later in the show to make it just a question segment for Bump, because Curtis Rogers and myself were asking you a ton of questions about college players, like the best player you've ever seen in person, the most overrated player, all these kinds of questions. And it was so fun, I decided, let's just have it on air. Let's have that in a place where listeners can text in too. It's just an entire segment about college players, the best, the most overrated, the most underrated, etc. It's going to be a great time.
Yes, it is.
That's coming up later in the show. Before we get to any of that, though, we have a Seahawks draft profile, another prospect profile. Seahawks going to be on the board in the second round, pick number 56 overall. That is their first pick of the draft. So Jake Heaps has been compiling a list of guys they could potentially take with that pick. And that list continues today with LSU wide receiver Terrace Marshall.
This is Jake and Stacy's off-season profile. A look at the key free agents, potential draft picks, and extension candidates for the Hawks championship run.
Let's go!
Draft profile.
Now, before Jake tells you guys about the kind of player that Marshall is, let me give you a very quick walkthrough of his background. He's a Louisiana native, a five-star recruit. He was the number one receiver in the nation back in 2018, which is why it was a huge deal when LSU managed to keep him in state, one of its own premier talents, keep him in Louisiana. He committed to them. And you know what? It's easy to be overshadowed in an LSU offense with Justin Jefferson and Ja'Marr Chase, but he wasn't. Because Marshall still finished his LSU career with 23 touchdowns. That ranks fourth in program history. A pretty prestigious program. Ranking fourth all time is pretty impressive. He led the team in receptions last year and yards and touchdowns as a junior. He was number three in the SEC in yards per game. Here's Jake to tell you the kind of player Marshall would bring Seattle.
Next prospect that I wanted to talk to you guys about is one that I think is going to garner a lot of attention and could be a very similar prospect to what DK Metcalf was like for the Seattle Seahawks. Now, without further ado, I'm going to introduce to you Terrace Marshall, receiver from LSU. 6'2 and 5'8, 205 pounds, 40, 4'3'8, and his vertical leap, 39 inches, bench press 19 times. Now, to me, as I look at Terrace Marshall, he's a player that brings a lot of intrigue. I think that ultimately he will be selected high in this draft just because of the LSU connection, the productivity, and the fact over the last couple years, LSU has really produced some tremendous talent at the receiver position. But I'm going to introduce you guys to Terrace Marshall because I do believe that there is an opportunity for Marshall to potentially slide in this draft. Now, Marshall was one of the top receiver prospects in the country coming out of Parkway High School in Bossier City, Louisiana. The LSU Tigers wasted zero time getting him out on the field as a true freshman. The following year, in 2019, he was a big contributor for the national champs, the LSU Tigers, as a sophomore, catching 46 passes for 671 yards and 13 scores. Now, just to put it in perspective, how crazy that year was, Marshall, Ja'Marr Chase, and Justin Jefferson each caught more than 10 touchdowns for LSU in 2019. Joe Burrow was cooking that year. In 2021, Marshall started the first seven games of the 2020 season, leading the team in receiving during that time. 48 receptions, 731 yards, 15.2 average per reception, and 10 touchdowns. Everything was looking great. Everything was going forward very, very smoothly for Terrace Marshall. But then he surprised everyone around the country, including LSU. And before the remainder of the season ended, he opted out of the season. Now, it was due to COVID, as he was saying, but more so from my perspective and where this thing gathered from was, look, Terrace Marshall looked at the season, looked at the craziness that was going on. He went into his final year basically as a junior and knew that he was going to declare and said, look, I've done everything that I need to do on film to show NFL evaluators that I'm the real deal and that I have a chance to be selected high in this draft. Therefore, I am not going to continue to deal with everything else that is going on with this COVID-filled craziness of a season, and ended up walking away and dropping out of LSU so that he can train for the NFL draft. Therein lies a ton of questions about Marshall. Now, when you look at it from an evaluation standpoint, if you're a scout, if you're a coach, if you're a general manager, you are wondering, how much does Terrace Marshall love the game? This rubs me the wrong way. Obviously, as a guy who loved the game and wanted to be there for my teammates, I just can't comprehend walking away from a season with LSU and not finishing it on a high note. And I know the LSU Tigers were struggling as a program at the time, but still, it is your last hurrah in college football. Now, if you're taking this from a business perspective, and a lot of these college athletes are nowadays, you can definitely understand the business side of things. Look, you've done everything you've needed to do on film, show what you can do, and at this point, all you're doing is risking further injury and chance for you to get injured and not be able to be drafted as high as you foresee yourself being drafted. So, one of the things that Marshall very clearly has, he has all the physical tools. He has elite size, speed, and hands. He's a big-time playmaker. Get this, he averaged a touchdown every four catches in over the last two seasons. That is absurd. One of the more absurd stats that I've seen from a receiver in quite some time. For a bigger receiver, he has great feet getting in and out of breaks. He easily separates downfield and tracks the ball deep extremely well. He would fit into the Seattle Seahawks offense beautifully with Russell Wilson, the best deep ball thrower in the game. Predominantly an outside receiver, but has been moved around and worked in the slot as well. So he's a guy that does have the ability to move and be a chess piece across the field for you. Which I think is very, very positive. That means that he's a smart football player, that he can take in a lot of information. Now, the negative aspects about Terrace Marshall is his work ethic and love for the game has been in question based off of the fact that he left early. And then also, when you watch him on film, you put on the tape, he doesn't run every single route with tenacity. He doesn't run to necessarily win on every single route. He takes plays off. So those things are in major question about Terrace Marshall. He can be as great as his work ethic will be in the NFL. That has been the main consensus about Marshall. Now, he shows on film that he has dropped the ball due to a lack of focus. And I think that those are things that you can obviously easily be cleaned up. But Terrace Marshall, to me, is a guy that if he fell to 56 for whatever reason, if the NFL over-evaluated this whole process and just tried to outthink themselves like they did with DK Metcalf a few years ago, the Seattle Seahawks would be absolutely crazy to not take a chance on Terrace Marshall. You would have DK Metcalf, Terrace Marshall on the outside, Tyler Lockett in the slot. This would be proven one of the more dynamic offenses in the league. And when you're talking about receiver three, don't just get a receiver three just because it's on the to-do list. Upgrade the position. Make it impactful. Make the change impactful to your roster. And I think that that's why I profiled Dyami Brown a few days ago, and that's why I'm profiling Terrace Marshall. If these guys are available at these points in time, this will make an immediate impact and make your offense truly, truly more dynamic than what it already is, more explosive than what it is. And that is a scary proposition for any NFL defense out there.
And thank you to Jake Heaps for giving us that prospect profile on LSU wide receiver Terrace Marshall, multitasking on vacation with the family and profiling some wide receivers for us. So, Bump, here's my question. Now, we've gone full circle now, back to the open. We started the show by talking about Tyler Lockett's press conference and the two things that stood out to us. First, it was his comments about the second half of the season, a lack of adjustments on offense. Secondly, we talked about his comments on how the team reached out to them about Russell Wilson. I'm going to put that aside for right now, jump back to that first one. Here's why not adjusting matters, and here's why it matters so much that that was an issue. You have to have a great defense, an elite offense, whatever it is, to win a Super Bowl. And I said, does Seattle have either? And we couldn't decide yet. So I'm wondering if a wide receiver like Marshall, like a free agent that might still be out there, is the difference. So do you look at that and say, you know what? It's not someone we need, but it makes us that much better. And if we're out here competing with teams like Kansas City, with teams like Tampa Bay, with teams like Green Bay, who scored more points than anyone in the league per game last year, we need to have a ton of weapons. And that includes a wide receiver 3 that could be like a wide receiver 2 on another team.
Yeah, if you could get a wide receiver like Terrace Marshall, that's definitely going to help your offense. Now, I wouldn't count on him early, like Justin Jefferson, you know, out the gate, just balling like that. But you could get him in the mix and kind of fill him out and see what he can do, because there's going to be a transition. Some guys transition from college football to the NFL, and they just have it. Most guys, it takes a little bit, and he would come into a position to where he wouldn't feel the pressure to do that. I keep saying it about these young guys on the Seahawks because there are some veterans there. At each spot, you have veterans who have been there and done that. He could come in and help out. What I like about this dude is he reminds me of Brandon Marshall. I think he can put on maybe 5 to 10 more pounds and be that type of receiver. Jake mentioned it. He played outside. He can play inside. And it's all about the big plays. We haven't even heard about this dude, really, because he's been behind who? Justin Jefferson and Ja'Marr Chase. Yep. And yet he still has 23 touchdowns. 23 touchdowns in the last two seasons. So that lets you know he has big play ability. He left early because he knew this is a business now. I got a family that's dependent on me.
Yeah.
You know, I got to make this money and make sure my body's ready to go. So a lot of these guys in college are approaching this as a business. And for some guys, it is. A guy like me, I knew I was going to go 4 years. I didn't have the talent that this young man had. A guy like him, he made a business decision, and I think it was the smart decision. I hope he goes back and gets his degree. That's always fun. But if you got a chance to change the lives of your family, you go ahead and do that. And I think this young man could be a good number 3 receiver for the Hawks, possibly take over once Mr. 16 gets a little old up there, and see what happens.
And, you know, college sports is a business, but I digress.
Sure,
that's just me in here.
Where's
slipping that in there because I'm petty.
Sure.
Exactly. Now, last question here before we jump into 4-down territory. The Seahawks only have 3 picks, Bump.
Yep.
On the board for the first time on day 2, pick number 56 overall. We have all expected, you, me, Curtis, you listening, everyone else, that they will trade back because John Schneider cannot sit through a draft with just 3 picks. There's no way he does that. In fact, the last team to only use 3 picks and not make a trade to acquire more or trade back to acquire more was the Jets in 2009. Mm. That was forever ago. That was when A-Rod was maybe could have been still relevant for Anthony Edwards, who was like 8 years old. Yeah.
I'm 30 now. I'm
exactly.
Old.
You got one on the way. That was a long time ago. So none of us are expecting the Seahawks to do that. If Marshall's there at 56, do you draft him?
Ooh, I think you do. I think you do. You get a talent like that, you got to do it. But I don't think it's going to happen, honestly. Okay. Schneider's going to do something.
All right. Let's jump into to 4-down territory here. Brought to you by Genuine Auto Glass.
This is 4-down territory, brought to you by Genuine Auto Glass.
With Jake and Stacy.
You live for moments like this. Time for us to step up and take it.
First down, Bump, Tyler Lockett yesterday. He spoke on the offense. So what is the biggest adjustment you need to see from Seattle's offense in 2021?
Biggest adjustment I want to see. I want to see formations that look like a run end up being a pass. I want to see movement before the snap. And when I talk about creativity, when I say that word creativity, they're not going to throw out a pass concept I've never seen before. You watching a football, you've seen them all. There's only so much you can do. I'm more talking about the pre-snap, getting your ballers the ball, not asking Russell Wilson to toss the rock down the field 30 times every time. I think you have the personnel getting Chris Carson involved in the screen game. I think he wasn't used enough when it comes to that. So, be creative. I need more screens. I need runs that look like passes. I need passes that look like runs. I need those second-level defenders on their heels every single down because they don't know what's coming. It's beautiful when you line up in a formation and you got 5 options off of it. That's what I want to see.
Second down. Stacy.
Curtis.
Peeling back the curtain a little bit, Stacy threw it to the 4 downs open.
I was a minute early, sorry.
Eating my lunch, and so I had to.
Did you just swallow a potato whole?
I think so. One of those like baby potatoes. Yeah.
No, sorry.
I took it out of you, boy.
Sorry.
Second down, Stacy. Seahawks have needs at wide receiver and cornerback in this year's draft. Of those two positions, which would you rather they acquire?
Now, I first was thinking of making the argument that, you know what? You have holes at cornerback, but go ahead and take the best wide receiver you can find on the board and just try to make yourself an elite offense. I've decided that they have enough weapons to be an elite offense, even without taking a guy like Marshall at three. Would it help to have him? Absolutely. Would you be tempted to pull the trigger like Bump said? 1,000%. I mean, you heard Bump profile him. You heard Jake profile him. That is a really tempting acquisition, but they have options there. Don't forget, they didn't have that guy. I mean, they did. The difference was they had more, but a lot of the biggest keys and weapons that they had on their offense when they were flying high last year, they still have. They have Chris Carson. They have Tyler Lockett. They have DK Metcalf. They've improved at left guard. They're bringing back their center. They've still got left tackle Dwayne Brown. Obviously, Russell Wilson. Penny is going to be there for a full year when he wasn't last year. And this time you've added a tight end, Gerald Everett, that might be able to do something for you where your tight end group led by Greg Olsen was not last year. Whether it was by scheme, whether it was by personnel, whatever it was, I think that if you have to make a choice, you go cornerback. What I worry about is the depth that they have, not just behind the starters right now, but long term. You can see what you have with Freddie Swain. You've got Tyler Lockett extended. You've got DK Metcalf locked up. When you look at cornerback, you've got Witherspoon on a one-year deal. Who knows how long DJ Reed is here. Trey Flowers inching in on the final years of his contract. And who do you have behind them? Guys you signed to reserve future deals. You don't have a lot of guys that you've drafted and you're accumulating there in that cornerback room. I think you got to add to it.
Third down. Bump, we've seen the Bucks and Lions players joining the Seahawks and Broncos players by saying they will not attend voluntary workouts. Is this a good or a bad move?
Good or bad move? I'm going to focus on the Bucks. It's a good move for Tom Brady, for Mike Evans, for Chris Godwin, for Scotty Miller, for Rob Gronkowski. It's not a good move for Justin Watson. Who's that? Exactly. Josh Pearson, who's that? Exactly. O.J. Howard, you know who that is. Brad Seaton. It's not a good move for those guys because they need the reps. They need to be seen. Again, it's so unfair, man, that the people, it's almost like our society, right? The people with all the money, got all the power, mm-hmm. and not really thinking about the people who need this, who are counting on this. All those guys are set. So is it a good move? Yes, again, for Tom Brady, for Mike Evans, for Chris Godwin. It's not a good move for the guys battling to make this football team. Veterans are going to stay healthy. They've been there. They've done that. They know that they can just show up a few weeks before the season and be ready to go. These young guys need to be acclimated. They need to know what it's like to be a pro. They need to look across the field and know the guy they're competing against and say, look, I have a fair shot at this. No offseason, no fair shot for these young guys.
Fourth down. Bump, why are you so optimistic that Tyler Lockett will continue to make plays as he ages gracefully?
Tyler Lockett, this is the reason why. You know what? I watched film of Jerry Rice when he played for the Seattle Seahawks. He was slower, wasn't as quick. But you know what he did? He made the tough catches. Tyler Lockett is going to make the tough catch. All right, we've seen so many times he has a guy on his hip, a guy over the top, and he still makes the play. So as you get older, you're slower, you're not as quick, you rely on your wits, you rely on looking at a defense and trying to diagnose what they're doing and making the tough catch. Tyler Lockett has shown he can do that. So as he gets older, he can still toss it up to 16. If it's anywhere within a 5-foot radius, he has a chance. That's what's going to help him gracefully age out. So, yeah.
Tyler Lockett is one of those guys that has never played like the size he is. Meaning, I think that people that may not be watching Seattle as closely will always consider Tyler Lockett to be like their backup fantasy football option or like a secondary wide receiver. Or they'd be like, he'd be wide receiver 2 in a different offense because they aren't paying attention to just how good he is. He has never looked like a smaller receiver. He's played inside. He's played outside. He's played several different roles within that offense. He's been great at the deep ball. He's been great with quick passes. He has great awareness. He's made those like toe tap catches that he's just dragging out of the end zone. It is unreal. I've never seen anyone play like Lockett does at his size, and I feel like that doesn't get appreciated enough.
You just described a good football player.
Mm-hmm.
That's why he's going to hang around. And a good person, man. That helps as well.
I have some questions that are coming in. We have a couple minutes left here, so I'm just going to go to the text line. So this it was a question about cornerbacks from the 360. I'm going to throw to you, Bump. Did the Hawks use DJ Reed, I'm assuming, to his fullest ability? I get the vibe he doesn't think so. Thank you.
Yeah. Played some corner, played some nickel, returned some punts. I think that he came in what week was it? He was middle of the season. I feel like he was he came in and started going. So you're not just going to roll the dice on a guy who you picked up on the low, who battled some injuries. You're going to sprinkle him in there and see what he can do. He's another guy who can benefit from voluntary workouts because he can show the guys, look, I can do more. I'm in better shape. I understand the defense more. I understand what my position coach wants for me at this point. As the season goes along, I think we'll see more of what DJ Reed can do. But I've already saw a guy who can return punts, who can pick up fumbles, who can cause fumbles, who's everywhere. So I think we'll just see a little bit more of that.
The 425 says Stacey's Petites. You're absolutely right. DJ Reed also starting my lineup of starting Petite, all Petite squad. From the 360, Bump, should Seahawks fans like myself view Daryl Taylor as a rookie who opted out last season? Thanks. I'm going to add no. I don't think as a rookie that opted out last season, but I do think that the extent of his, I don't want to say injury. The Seahawks knew that he was coming back from surgery. He had surgery shortly before the draft, I think 2 or 3 months before the draft. I don't think that they expected it to take as long as it did because I don't think that Carroll would have been telling us as early as training camp that he could be getting some work in. I think they would have been like, oh, we're going to hold him back.
Yep.
Like, I don't think they would have given us any reason to ask more questions.
No, I think they were hoping and expecting him to be back and to get some snaps.
Yeah.
So, no, I wouldn't see him as a rookie who opted out. But going into this year, I would still see him as a rookie because he hasn't gotten all those snaps. And that's valuable, man, valuable. You have to get snaps. You have to get experience. So, not a rookie who opted out, but I see him as a rookie this year in 2021.
Now, tell me if you agree with this hot take from the 509. Hot take, Trey Flowers going to be cornerback number one by the end of next season.
Ooh, that's hot. I'm not buying that, though.
I'm not, but it is really interesting, and here's why. Because he has not been that guy. And the Seahawks, it's been a while since they've run into the issue of what do you do when a guy isn't like a commanding a big contract until the final year of his deal? What happens if Rashad Penny comes out and has a 1,000-yard season? Mm. I don't think it's going to happen, but what do you do? Like, what do you do if he did nothing for you and then all of a sudden he can command money?
That's what's so crazy about athletic sports in general. All you need is one hot year at the right time. You have a hot season at the end of your contract. Man, you just made yourself a lot of money.
Looking at you, Joe Flacco.
If that's a problem, I'll take that problem. That means Penny and Carson are getting it done. I'll take it.
That's exactly right. All right. The Timberwolves' number one pick had no idea who their new owner was. Oh, also the new owner is Alex Rodriguez. That's next.
This is The Timeline
with Jake and Stacy.
Brought to you by 1-800-DUIOA.
It is The Timeline on Jake and Stacy. Michael Bump is in for Jake Heaps today. We are reading you guys the top stories you're going to see on your own timelines, and I have two for you. Let's go ahead and get started with the Timberwolves' number one pick, Anthony Edwards. Hilarious person. I don't think this is a joke, though. He's asked what he thinks about new Timberwolves owner Alex Rodriguez. There's a problem, though. Cut number 12. He has no idea who he is.
Do you have any thoughts about him? Are you an A-Rod fan at all growing up or anything like that? What you think about what he might bring to the team?
A fan? Who is he?
The baseball player? Alex Rodriguez?
Yeah, no, I don't know who that is.
Okay.
I know he's going to be the owner, but I don't know about baseball.
As a reminder, Anthony Edwards, born in 2001.
Oh, come on. You got to know your history, though. You got to kind of know who the greats are. If you are a great, especially if you're a great athlete yourself, and you claim to be a great baseball player as well, you got to know who the ball. That's like me not knowing who Ozzie Smith is. You know what I mean? It's like me not knowing who Moses Malone was. You got to go back and appreciate history when it comes to athletics.
See, at first I was thinking that. At first I was thinking, look, it's okay if you don't know someone from a long while ago, but A-Rod is like on primetime things. Like, yes. He was dating J-Lo. He ruined it, but he was dating J-Lo. Like, if you know who J-Lo is, like you said, Bump, if you know who J-Lo is, you should know who A-Rod is. Come on. But hear me out. At first, I hated Anthony Edwards when he said this because he made me feel old, and you know how I hate that. When you're in your 30s, you aren't ready to accept that you're in your 30s. You're new to them. You're testing the waters, and you don't like it very much here. Your knees hurt all the time, and you aren't ready for it. But then I decided I'm actually Team Anthony Edwards here because I always hate it when, like, Bob or Mike Salk will be like so shocked if I don't know like a 90s movie or like
an 80s band.
And I'm like, guys, I wasn't alive or I was too young to appreciate this movie because you're talking about a movie that was like for adults when I was four or something. And like, even if it's relevant and there are lots of, you know, references made to it today, like a movie like Pulp Fiction. Yeah. There's lots of references made to it today, but I don't think I've ever seen it. And that's maybe not the best example.
But you were also like 4 or 5 years
right,
old when it came out.
Point being, you can't. Someone isn't stupid if their pop culture clock started when you were well into adulthood.
Yeah, but he's in a different era. This is Instagram, Snapchat, like everything you can get so quickly. Like he doesn't even know what an encyclopedia is probably. Like what is that? You have to open a book to learn about something else. Like the fact that they can get information so quickly and that Instagram will just feed you a bunch of just nonsense. I'm like, come on, bro. You have to know who A-Rod is, man. And again, it's the connection to J-Lo.
Well, and there's the connection to baseball because the other thing that makes this pretty funny is it's not like Edwards isn't a baseball fan or a former player. Cut number 13. He says he could have gone pro.
I used to play baseball when I was young. Yeah, it'd be hot.
Really? How good a baseball player were you?
I could have went to the MLB.
MLB?
Yeah.
I am not surprised.
I'm serious though.
I love your confidence. What positions did you play?
I played pitcher, shortstop, third base, and center field.
Those are the prime positions.
That's what I'm trying to tell you.
Yeah, you were the best player on your team.
Is that the net? Now we talking.
You could hit the ball.
But I was 4th, 5th hitter. You know what that means.
Clean up. Yeah.
Scrape cleanup on aisle 3.
I like how you said scrape too. Not straight, scrape. Straight up.
Man, now I'm starting a new conspiracy theory where he does know who A-Rod is, and it was just shade. Like when Mariah was asked what she thinks about, gosh, who was it?
Was it Whitney Houston?
Was it Whitney? It was either Whitney or someone that Mariah would think is below her, like Christina Aguilera or something. And she was like, I don't know her. You clearly do. Like now I'm kind of team. That's what happened. Now I'm team. It's just Anthony Edwards being like, I don't know her. I'm so sorry.
Can we get more interviews like that though?
Right.
How just open and honest. He was like, at least when I was growing up, you're always taught to say the right thing and don't be too cocky. You got to be humble. You got to do this. He's like, nah. Yeah. You know, 4th and 5th spot. You know what that means.
Clean up aisle 3. I love that line. Love that line.
All right. Next story here. Aaron Rodgers has been guest hosting Jeopardy. Unfortunately, the contestants, not as familiar with his team as he is, they failed to answer this question about the Packers.
In the 1960s, these Midwesterners earned 5 NFL championship trophies. Green Bay Packers?
Try to go for 600.
Now, they managed to get a question about the Celtics right after that.
Yeah, and Aaron was like, oh, now you know the answer.
Yeah. Now you get it. What's a sports trivia category you think you guys would dominate in? Make it as specific as possible. Like 1990 Seahawks or 2000s, I don't even know.
2000s basketball. You ask me anything.
Like 90s NBA?
Yeah, like late 90s, early 2000s. I could probably muster it up the right answer.
Curtis, I feel like you dominate 90s MLB.
Yeah, that or 2000s MLB.
Yeah.
2010s MLB.
Okay.
2020s.
Okay. We get it, Curtis.
Or like Arizona Wildcats basketball, like 1994 to the present. I think that would be another category I could dominate.
How about just what if I did Arizona sports, any like category?
Basketball or football? Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, but
Curtis,
I love that.
Curtis, you're different though, bro.
That's
you've got what we call a sickness.
Everything. I could tell him something 6 months from now, some random guy, and he's going
to
remember.
No, listen, you guys, one of my favorite things to do with Curtis is just to ask him a random question. Like I'm pulling it up right now for World Series winners. And Curtis, I want you to tell me who were the two teams in the World Series in 1986?
86? That'd be the New York Mets and the Boston Red Sox.
Who won the series?
That'd be the New York Mets in 7 games. It's Bill Buckner.
It's
the
a sickness.
Ball went through his legs.
It's a sickness. Okay, how about this one? Who won the World Series in 1999?
99, that'd be the New York Yankees. They beat the Atlanta Braves four games to none?
It was a sweep. See, yeah. You guys, this is what I'm talking to you about. How about, let's go even further back. Let's see if you were, okay, this is going to be a little harder for you. How about like 76?
76.
This was decades before you were born.
Is that the old Cincinnati Reds?
It was. This is what I'm saying.
I am
straight up concerned for Curtis. It's weird. I'm just looking at a list and I'm pointing to a name. 1983.
83, that would have been the Baltimore Orioles.
Do you have the Wikipedia page up in front of you right now? Are you sure you
do
not?
I'm 100% sure.
I don't know if I believe you, Curtis. I'm exceptionally concerned. All right, now we do have some sound. And Curtis, you're the one that pointed this out to me. Bump, I don't know if you've heard it. Curtis is going to get so much joy from this segment. As a Husky fan, it's going to hurt me. As Huskies fans, you might be hurt, but here's why it's important to listen to it, because we are all wondering what Mike Hopkins' future looks like with Washington, what the future of the men's Husky hoops looks like, and we're going to talk about that as well as some audio that has everyone talking coming up next.
You're listening to Jake and Stacey.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Jake Heaps and Stacey Ross.
I want everyone to know that Curtis continued to guest teams during the break. Michael Bumpus filling in for Jake Heaps and I, throwing some years at him. And I tried to go really far back. I tried to get classic because I was like, you know what? There's so much baseball history here. You might know 2002. You might know 2003. Let's see if you know 76.
76, that'd be the Reds.
Let's see if you know 56.
56 was the Yankees over the Dodgers.
And then I said, what about 46?
And then I said, St. Louis Cardinals.
And I was so upset because I bet that you wouldn't get it. It's uncanny. Now, we have some Husky news to get to. It's really just some new sound that came out. So the sound is a couple days old, but the news itself is all still unfolding. So I'll tell you what you need to know. So Hamir Wright became the sixth Husky to enter the transfer portal last week. Recently, he joined former Husky Noah Dickerson on his Noah Dickerson podcast a few days ago, that a product of Sports Illustrated Husky Maven. There's plenty to kind of digest here from what Wright had to say, and there's a lot. There is a lot. Curtis will get a lot of sick satisfaction from hearing all
I'm
of this unfold. Also an important conversation to have here. So let's go ahead and get started with some of what Wright had to say about Hopkins. So let's start with cut number 8 right here. This is one of his critiques of Hopkins.
Once he has his fixed mindset for who you are as a player, there was not much that he would want you to do outside of that. You know what I mean? He'll be like, oh, I'm here for you to get to this spot. Like, you know, if you could just hit threes and play defense. I'm like, well, I play defense, bro. I hit threes. I'm like, but what you don't understand is stop trying to hypnotize me and try to sedate me on what's going to get me to the next level. I said, Jalen Nowell isn't taking 15 shots in a league right now or in his first year. So you didn't put him in a college situation to do what's best for him the next level, because he's not doing at all. I mean, he is, but you know what I mean? Like, he doesn't have that role that he had here that he does there. Nobody does. So for my case, why use that as, you know, the barometer for how I should be on the court? Kind of, I always felt like I could do more, but, you know, it is what it is.
Now, I will say, I listened to the podcast in full, and both Wright and Dickerson ended it at the end. They were like, this guy's so likable as a person. Like, they had nothing bad to say about Hopkins the person, but particularly Wright was critical of Hopkins the coach.
And as a coach, at least the good coaches, you try to get your players to do what's best for the team, right? You're not thinking, okay, this is what's going to get you to the next level, because end of the day, Hopkins has to win games to keep his job. Mm-hmm. So you recruit players, you have players on your team that say, okay, this is the role I want him to play on my team. Now, as a player, you're like, especially basketball, I'm trying to get out. So what can I do to get myself out? So they have to meet in the middle somewhere. And it sounds like Hopkins doesn't meet guys in the middle. Mm-hmm. He has them do what's best for the team. And that could benefit you, because now when Hopkins talks to scouts, he can say, look, this is the role I wanted him to play for me. But you can't knock a player to be like, look, I can do those things. I want to do more. You want those guys on your roster.
And that's completely fair. And honestly, if I'm right and I'm being told, like, if we play this way and sorry, you aren't going to have the role that you want to have, we're going to win games. And that's fine. Problem is that Wright also says that Hopkins sometimes plainly gets outcoached. Cut number 9, he says he got outcoached against Roy Williams back in the 2018 tourney.
Coach Hop always say play fast. He didn't know what that means to play fast. That boy Roy Williams, yo, when they shot the ball, Noah, and I went to go try and get it, and as soon as I would turn around to run, that boy Cameron Johnson was teed up in the corner, bro. I said, does he not crash ever? I said, are we losing the board 4v5?
What do you guys hear?
I hear that he didn't agree with the way Hopkins thought playing fast meant. I hear that Roy Williams is one of the greatest coaches of all time. So if you're going to get out-coached, I'd gladly be out-coached by Roy Williams. Roy Williams out-coaches almost everybody that he plays. There's only a couple of coaches who can sit at the table with Roy Williams. So I understand his frustration. And in hindsight, it's 2020, and 2020 to you is different than it is for me. And the kid sounds frustrated. He sounds like he wanted to do more, and he felt like this whole program was limited, and he's allowed to feel that way. But we're talking about Roy Williams, though, in North Carolina. This ain't San Bernardino, University of California. You know, this is a legit program, one of the best coaches to ever do it.
Now, Curtis, you can join in on this conversation, too, because I know that you've been not only watching this program closely, but watching other programs around the Pac-12 as they develop or fall as well, and how the Huskies kind of fall into that. And so what I want to know is, when you listen to this podcast, when you listen to Wright isn't, and I don't mean any kind of disrespect, Wright isn't a star. He's not your star player.
He's a role
player. He's not a great player. He's a role player. Is this a player who's just mad he didn't get more time? Is this a bigger problem? Because you can make the argument for either.
I think this is a case of sour grapes, but he is one of six players to have left the program this offseason, and we're only a couple weeks after the season has ended. And I mean, obviously the Huskies have been done for about a month now, but I don't think this is an isolated case. I think there are probably other guys in this program that feel this way. Hamir Wright just took a very public format.
I was shocked.
Yeah. Like, you don't ever hear guys do this at any college. And I think because of him doing this, it does kind of speak to sort of the mess that's going on right now, like with the basketball program. If there was if this was at like Duke, or if this was at North Carolina or something, I don't think you would ever hear a player throw the coaching staff that they played under for 4 years, which Hamir Wright did. Mm-hmm. I don't think you would ever hear them throw the coaching staff under the bus like he did here. And that kind of speaks to sort of the locker room culture that has sort of manifested here. And I don't think that's a very healthy environment, especially if you're trying to build a winner. And Mike Hopkins desperately needs to build a winner if he's going to stay beyond this season, which I don't think is going to happen.
You don't think he's staying beyond this season?
I don't think so.
His
buyout becomes much more palatable after this year. I think it shrinks down to about $7 or $8 million. It's not the $12 million that it is right now. But I mean, there were other comments Hamir Wright made that definitely speak to the frustration that he was feeling. He told Hopkins to his face that his talents were being wasted here.
For me, it just wasn't a good situation for me to be in basketball-wise at all. You know what I mean? And we talked multiple times throughout the year. You know, my head was at most of the year. It was just like, I felt like I wasted a lot of my talents here. You know, I told Coach Hop that to his face, one-on-one. You know what I'm saying? So it's not a surprise to me or no one. But whatever reason why somebody wants to come up with it, if they're not taking no fault in it, then they're probably wrong. Because I take my fault in it. You know what I'm saying? So if people ain't willing to take their own, like, you know what I'm saying, you ask coach or anything like that, and he says, well, Hamir, you know, I wish he was this or I wish he was that, then you know who the problem was.
Sounds like a kid who played for a basketball team that didn't do very well. 5-21. I mean, if they were balling, if they were 21-5, his tone would be
different.
He's
like, I'm just part of the team. There's no I.
Yeah, but you're losing. So once you start losing, then opinions get louder, and people feel like they are the answer to fix things. And maybe he's speaking some truth. Mm-hmm. You know, we're not in the locker room. We're not in that program. But when I look at the record and it's 5-21, I'm like, okay, it sounds like a kid who's frustrated that he went 5-21 and felt like he could have helped the team be better. And you can't fault him for that. But this is a young man dealing with some frustration.
Definitely dealing with some frustration. There's also fans dealing with frustration with the program, though. This is a program that went from first to worst, and then congratulations, finished 11th last year. I mean, this is not a program that seems on the rise. They're losing recruits. They aren't doing a great job of keeping their best recruits in state going to their school. And this is a great area. Like, a lot of stars have come out of this area. Ballers. They're not going to Washington. They're going to Arizona. They're going to UCLA. They're going to Gonzaga. Or they're leaving the state entirely when they are 20 minutes away from you. Like, you need to be recruiting these guys. Recruiting has been a problem. I think that's why people look at this program and they say, where's the answer? Where's the fix? It doesn't feel like it's going to come here in a couple months. This feels like it's years away. So what do you do?
What do you do? What'd you say, C-Raj? Hopkins out of here?
I don't see him coming back after this next season. I think he does come back for this year, but beyond that, I think there's a change being made.
Got to change it up. It's all about recruiting. That coach has to sit on your couch mm-hmm. and talk to your mom and grandma and dad and all that and convince you that this is the place to be and do it to the right players. It sounds like six of those guys weren't the right guys.
Right. I mean, as a Husky, I hope they turn it around quickly, but we'll see what happens there. You guys, it is Wednesday, which means it's Hype Train. It's a game I love playing. Bump is going to be in with us for this one. Here's how it works. I will tell you guys five trends, not just in the world of sports, sometimes a little bit outside of sports. There's going to be a fun one for our fifth one today, for instance. You will tell me if it's all hype, if it's not real, or if there's a lot of legitimacy to it. We've got some good ones here. Looking at you, Mitch Haniger. That's all coming up next.